98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. Brought to you by Collins Comfort Masters, proud home services partner of the Arizona Cardinals. 4 o'clock reset.
Going to start today's 4 o'clock reset with the Phoenix Suns, and a lot of the teeth have been removed from tonight's matchup between the Suns and the Utah Jazz. Really looking forward to it. Still looking forward to it, but man, a lot of missing guys tonight for both teams. For the Suns, DeAndre Ayton is doubtful, while starting forwards Jay Crowder and backup point guard Cam Payne will not play. For the Jazz, it's even worse. Mike Conley, Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, all out. Bogdanovic, Joe Ingles, Royce O'Neal, all questionable for tonight's game, which starts at 7 o'clock at Footprint Center. The first matchup between these two elite Western Conference teams tonight, Gambo.
Yeah, it's just not the game that you are hoping for, right? You want to see the Suns test their mettle against the best in the West. They've had three games against Golden State, and they had not played Utah yet, but both teams severely, you know, handicapped right now with the guys that they're missing. So, still, a Suns game with the bench that they have and the depth that they have, still incredibly fun to watch because you get to watch guys like Bismack Biyombo dominate basketball games.
Suns right now have an 800 winning percentage in the NBA, and we are more than halfway through the season. Speaking of the NBA, after missing over a month with an MCL sprain, Lakers star Anthony Davis probable to return on Tuesday night against the Nets in Brooklyn for the Lakers. Gambo, question is, how long will he be able to last? He's had a lot of injuries over the last several years, obviously.
Yeah, and I think they lost to the Heat last night. So it's going to be his first game since December 17th. He sprained his MCL against the T-Wolves. So they haven't gotten many games. You know, that combination of LeBron, Russell Westbrook, and Anthony Davis have not played a whole bunch of games together.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. It is, they did lose last night to the Miami Heat. Curious hire, curious name today for the ASU football team. They named former NFL head coach Brian Billick as an offensive analyst and advisor to head coach Herm Edwards. The school made the announcement today. Brings with him 30 years of coaching experience from the NFL and college football ranks, and he's now the third coach with NFL coaching experience on that staff, including, obviously, Marvin Lewis and Herm Edwards.
Yeah, he's a great offensive. He's an offensive genius. So I think it's a terrific hire when you could bring in a guys like that with his knowledge and his, you know, his coaching and things like that, all those years of experience. So I think he'll be a good presence for ASU. I just sent him a message a few minutes ago, so I'm expecting that we'll have him on the show maybe tomorrow. I'm looking forward to having him on the show.
Looking forward to that as well. Pac-12 today, punishments for the ASU basketball team after their game against Stanford. Head coach Bobby Hurley fined 20 large and suspended for tonight's game against USC. Guard Jay Heath was also suspended for tonight's game for making contact with an official.
Frustrating. The Cardinal had 32. They made 32 out of 41 free throws. ASU, six players picked up at least four fouls. Both senior forward Kamani Lawrence and sophomore forward Alonzo Gaffney fouled out. ASU only got to the free throw line nine times. Now, Stanford had a lot more size. They've got four players that are at least 6'7". They've got a lot more size. Bobby lost his mind. He went on the court. If you saw the video of it, he went after the one official. Guy had to separate him, walked away. He was still barking. He was very, very angry with the free throw disparity in the game. 41 free throws to 9. And it was a foul with 1 second left in the game. That was a controversial foul where a guy went to the free throw line, hit free three throws, and that was the game.
They're taking on USC tonight. That's a 9 o'clock tip time. You'll hear it on ESPN 620. Meanwhile, down the Interstate 10, the Arizona Wildcats remain the number 3 team in the country. They beat Cal over the weekend. And looky here, big game against UCLA coming up tomorrow night, Gambo.
There's no doubt that everybody is looking at this team and saying, okay, who have they played? How come they're ranked so high? And there's a lot of people that are looking at that. But they're ranked number 3, and they have a chance to beat a ranked team. With UCLA coming in, they got two games coming up against UCLA. They got USC coming up, so this is going to be fun. We're really going to find out what they're made of. Now, Tubulis didn't play in this game; he's still out with that ankle injury. But they've got all that size with Kalako and Balo, so they're able to overcome that. But to get him back for the UCLA game will be good. But they got a 4-game stretch. They're going to face UCLA twice, USC once, And it'll be good if they can get Tubulis back because he's such a good player.
And then one last note, Matt Cannata, who is a writer for the Pro Football Network, tweeted out this morning, unless the Dolphins are on a secret spy mission trip for their next head coach, then I think the next head coach of the Dolphins will be Vance Joseph. He writes, connecting all the dots and putting pieces of the puzzle together based on what we know leads me to that speculative conclusion. So he's not basing that off of a source or what he's hearing, just the speculation based off of the reports that have come out. Still, I've read a few things as well that suggest that maybe Vance Joseph is going to be the guy in Miami, potentially, Gambo.
Wow. Wow. That will be interesting to see what happens at defensive coordinator for the Cardinals if they lose Vance Joseph. A lot of people felt that if Cliff got off to a bad start next year and got canned, that Vance would absolutely be the interim coach for the rest of the season and have a chance to maybe keep the job. But Miami knows him well. That could be a good spot for him. So it'll be interesting to keep our eyes on that to see if he gets that job.
Yep, and certainly interesting around here to see what the Cardinals would do with defensive coordinator. That obviously becomes a big, big hire. But our top story of the day today on the Burns and Gambo Show is, of course, the divisional weekend that was the best weekend in the history of the NFL. I could take the time and do the research and look at other weekends that would even come close. I don't think there's any reason to bother with that. Every single game came down to a last-second play. Every single game was decided by, on average, about 3 points. It was a magnificent weekend filled with so much to talk about. Gambo, frankly, we've had a hard time breaking it down because there's just been too much good stuff from this past weekend.
Yeah, and it was 4 finishes, right? Every game came down to the final play. Just remarkable. Like, sometimes you think, oh, was this the best game? Or was this? And you got to think back, and it's hard to say, right? I don't think it's hard to say that that's the most amazing weekend in NFL football we've ever seen. All 4 games came down to the final play. All 4 games were decided by 15 points after last week, when, the average was 17 points,
right?
All 4 came down to 15. That's an average of 3.8 points per game. McPherson hit a 52-yarder to win it. Butterker hit a big field goal to send it to overtime. Robbie Gould, who's never missed a field goal in the playoffs, he's 20 for 20, hit a huge field goal. Matt Gay hit a field goal with the game winner with 30 yards out as time expired. I mean, the kickers came through big time. And some of the performances were unbelievable. Cooper Kupp was amazing. Davis, 4 touchdowns, never been done by a wide receiver in playoff history. Tyreek Hill was unbelievable. And some of the things that I like, Bernsey, I mean, a team that sacked the quarterback 9 times, lost. A team that fumbled the ball 4 times, lost. A team that was down 3 with a minute 54 left, and then down 3 again with 13 seconds left, won.
Yeah.
Like, just remarkable, remarkable games all the way through.
Okay, I think most would agree their favorite moment was the end of last night's Chiefs-Bills game. I mean, that was magnificent. That was the kind of stuff that you were so fortunate to be able to say you saw that live, because you'll remember that for a long, long time. Pop quiz on this. I'm going to spring this one on you. What was your second favorite moment of the weekend?
Second favorite moment of the week.
What was the second thing that the second moment of the weekend that made you go, wow, I can't believe I just saw that?
And it can't be the Buffalo Kansas City game. Yeah. We just taking that whole game out.
No, if you want to pick something from that game that wasn't the way it ended.
Tyreek Hill, the pass to Tyreek Hill for the touchdown.
Okay. The one where he gave the peace sign to the dude as he was running by?
Just unbelievable play. That was such an unbelievable play. Just blew me away.
Yeah.
I mean, the Cooper Kupp play. I mean, the Cooper Kupp, Matthew Stafford to Cooper Kupp on a blitz by Todd Bowles, one-on-one coverage with Cooper Kupp. But I loved the Tyreek Hill catch and for a touchdown. That was just was genius.
I think I was going to say the block punt.
Probably the Buffalo Kansas City game.
Probably, but the block punt in the San Francisco Green Bay game. Like, when that happened, I thought, oh my God, San Francisco's going to beat the Packers. You know, it was one of those, like when you're watching a movie and you finally figured out who done it. You know, you oh my gosh, I know what the twist is. Oh my gosh, I know who the criminal is. I know who the mastermind is. It was that moment where, oh my gosh, The San Francisco 49ers are about to beat the Green Bay Packers.
6 minutes left in the game. If this Armstead just had a big sack on third and eight, they're punting the ball from deep. And, Jordan Willis blocks it. The Hufanga, I think, is the guy that picked it up and brings it in, and it's 10-10, and you got a whole new game right there. That was tremendous. That was great. I thought there was the fourth and one stop of Derrick Henry in the Bengals-Tennessee game.
That was a big
play.
That
was huge to me.
Yeah.
The Logan Wilson interception, after the stop. So they stopped. They got the fourth and one Henry stop, and then Logan Wilson gets the interception, and then you get the tip right there. And so I don't know. There was just like there were great plays in that game. But, man, that's a great question. I would love to do that. I wish I would have done this as a topic. My five favorite plays, like four of them are probably in the Buffalo-Kansas
City
game.
Yeah, probably. Because, I mean, the one of the touchdowns to Gabriel Davis was on fourth down.
The one where he faked the guy out and if the cornerback fell, he faked like he was going outside and the guy was like a rumbling and bumbling and just fell down and he just was wide open in the end zone.
Yeah, that game last night.
That was unbelievable. That was almost unbelievable.
Instant classic. Maybe one of the best playoff games I've ever seen. When we come back, two names synonymous with winning. Both lost this past weekend, and now it's possible we've seen the last of these two Hall of Fame quarterbacks in their current jerseys or in a jersey at all. The end of the Brady Rodgers era, perhaps, is what we'll talk about next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station, Burns and Gambo.
I mean, I did not think we'd be talking about this after this game, but I'm gonna take some time and have conversations with the folks around here and then take some time away and make a decision obviously before free agency or anything kind of gets going on that front. But it's fresh right now. It's a little shocking for sure.
That's the voice of Aaron Rodgers after his number one seeded Green Bay Packers lost at home in the snow to a California team and a quarterback who had never taken a single snap in weather like that in his entire professional career. Yeah, he's a little shocked. And even more shocking than that, Gambo, for the first time in 12 years, we go into a conference championship weekend and there is no Aaron Rodgers or there's no Tom Brady. We haven't had a
hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Are you celebrating Rodgers as much as you're celebrating? I know you're celebrating Brady. You hate Brady. You've never liked Brady. I get that. Are you lumping Rodgers into that hallelujah?
Okay. Yeah, why not?
Tell me why.
Ben's gone. Roethlisberger's gone. Brady's gone. Man, we get to see. Hey, listen, Stafford and Garoppolo may not be going to the Hall of Fame. But it's newer blood. Stafford's never been there. Garoppolo has once, but yeah, I mean, I'm tired of the old guard. I want to see some. I can't wait to see Joe Burrow play. Mm. Mahomes is still fresh to me. I love Mahomes, man. So I'm all good with that. I would have been. I'm gonna love Josh Allen. I would have been happy if Buffalo got there because the future's bright with all these young quarterbacks. But yeah, I might be in the minority, but I don't want to see Brady anymore, and I don't want to see Rodgers anymore. And I get a chance to see somebody different, I'm all for it.
Yeah, we talked about this on Friday. As much as you could argue maybe I shouldn't, I've always kind of liked Aaron Rodgers. I like watching I like watching him play. I mean, just personality and whatever aside, I do enjoy and appreciate watching him play football. And certainly Tom Brady, I don't have the same feelings that you do about Tom Brady. I know you hate the guy and you can't wait to see him go away because all those years with the Patriots and you don't like the Patriots. But I would agree that it's refreshing every now and then to get a conference championship weekend that is new blood, that is somebody else, that's somebody different, that's not what you were expecting necessarily. I mean, Gambo, these are the two guys who are going to finish 1-2 in the MVP voting. And presumably it's going to be Rodgers number one and Tom Brady number two. They've had tremendous seasons and are deserving of that. But it is unusual to think that a conference championship weekend, A, is going to go off without the two guys who are probably going to finish 1-2 in MVP voting. And B, are going to go off with two guys who collectively have not missed this game in 12 years. It's a weird turning of the page, And a lot of people are wondering if it's permanent. A lot of people are wondering if Aaron Rodgers is done in Green Bay and if Tom Brady is just done, period.
Yeah, and I know you've got some sound. We'll play that in a second. Rodgers kind of hinted that he doesn't want to go through a rebuild, but they've got a really tough cap situation with like a $30 million over the cap. So they're not in a great situation. His cap number's, you know, pretty crazy. I could see Rodgers leaving. Like, I could see him leaving. I don't think he retires, but I could see him leaving. You know, listen, you know, maybe we'll get to next week with Rams 49ers and wish we had Green Bay Tampa Bay. I mean, maybe we would. Maybe we'll wish that we, you know, we had the Packers against the Bucks, Rodgers against Brady. But right now, for right now, I'm good. I'm good with it all, NFC West championship game and getting some different teams in there and some new blood in there and stuff like that. As for Brady, look, we just never know. He's going to be 45 years old before next season starts. At some point, this guy is going to stop playing. And a lot of people are asking that question, whether he walked off the field for the last time after that loss to the Rams.
There were reports all day Saturday that this might be it for him. And it wasn't just Schefter on ESPN. It was Jeff Darlington on ESPN. It was Ian Rappaport on NFL.com. And they were all kind of suggesting the same thing. Hey, it's far from a given that Tom Brady is going to be back next year. It's far from a sure thing that Tom Brady is going to be back next year. And so I'll admit it. I was watching that Tampa Bay Rams game wondering to myself, am I watching the end of Tom Brady's career? Is this it? I watched it with a little more intent than I might have otherwise, thinking that based off of the reporting from the day before, there's at least this suggestion out there that this could be it. You're 44 years old. You're coming off statistically one of your best seasons ever. You had a very frustrating end to the season with all the guys injured. You're really going to walk away now, Tom?
Here's why. They brought everybody back this year, right? That was a big storyline. They got everybody back. Everybody from a Super Bowl team is back.
All 22 starters were back, yes.
Burnsy, half the roster is going to be free agents. Chris Godwin's a free agent. Gronkowski, O.J. Howard, Leonard Fournette, Ronald Jones, Giovanni Bernard, Jason Pierre-Paul, Carlton Davis, Jordan Whitehead, Ndamukong Suh, Ryan Jensen, Alex Kappa, Willem Gostin, like half the freaking rosters, free agents, they can't do that again.
They're not going to be able to bring everybody
back. They can't do that again. No.
Nope. No way. No way.
So, like, they did it all. They brought everybody back to try to see if they could repeat, which hasn't been done since the Patriots in the early 2000s. They didn't get it done. They can't bring everybody back now. Like, they can't bring that roster back. So, that's something I think why he says, I want to take a little time. I'm going to take some time to ponder this decision. He's got to try to figure out what they're able to do. The GM, Jason Light, and Bruce Arians, they're not going to be able to bring everybody back, and he probably wants to have an idea what the roster is going to do. Because one thing I don't think Brady's going to do, he's not going to get his brain speed in.
No, no.
So if they're going to have a team that's going to be a 500 team, I think he'd rather walk away now. But we'll see. Time will tell.
Yeah, and look, love him or hate him, you got to acknowledge that Tom Brady has sacrificed an awful lot in terms of fun to be able to put himself in a position to compete in this late stage of his life, you know, at least if it was professional football life, being 44 years old. He might be, and I don't know the man, but part of him might be thinking, man, I'm ready to have some real ice cream and not some avocado ice cream. You know, like I'm ready to live a little and not grind so hard every single day all the time, because playing quarterback when you're that age is hard. As far as Aaron Rodgers,
you want to go to Baskin Robbins and get yourself a 3-scoop sundae.
Hey, there's a reason they don't sell avocado ice cream at Baskin Robbins. Why? Because avocado ice cream sucks. Nobody wants to eat it. No one's going to buy it if you sell it at Baskin Robbins. And Tom Brady might be thinking it's time to actually live a little and not stress so hard about trying to extend this career. My guess is he ends up coming back, but I certainly would not rule out him retiring given the reporting that's been done. As far as Aaron Rodgers goes, man, there was a lot of momentum building up the last couple of weeks for him coming back to Green Bay, and it kind of feels like they're right back to square one now with this loss. Like, and I kind of had a fear that could happen, that if they lost to San Francisco, that maybe that would put that bitter taste back in everybody's mouth, and it kind of feels like it's happened, because now that they've lost, and now that he's 0-4 against the 49ers, and they haven't won the Super Bowl in 10 years, there are a lot of people talking that Aaron Rodgers might be done in Green Bay and ready to move on. And certainly, as you point out, cap-wise, it's going to be really difficult to keep him and a competitive team around him, given their cap situation.
Okay, yes or no? I'm not going to hold you to it. Yes or no? Does Tom Brady retire?
No.
I'm going to say no, too. I think he plays another year. Does Aaron Rodgers play for the Packers next year?
No.
Okay, we agree on both of those. I'm going to say the same thing. Brady comes back, Rodgers goes and plays for somebody else.
Okay, I'll counter your question with another question.
Okay, all right, go ahead.
What has a greater chance of happening? Tom Brady retiring or Aaron Rodgers staying in Green Bay? What is more likely to happen?
I think it's more likely that Rodgers returns.
Then Brady retires?
Thinks that the grass is not greener on the other side. No perfect situation out there for him. Take another shot at this. Try to get another one. Yep. It's a good team. I that's what I would think.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, when greatness happens, and we saw plenty of it this weekend, we tend to forget the other side of it and the team that allowed a big play to happen. This past weekend, yeah, there were great moments. There were also blunders. Which was the worst of the bunch? We'll talk about it coming up. Burns and Gambo show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo.
All right, we actually, for fun, added another poll question. So let's start with the second one that we added, because our original poll question dovetails very nicely into what we're going to talk about here in the segment. So for both, let's turn it back over to Eric.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update, presented by Sanderson Ford.
First one has to do with overtime.
It seems like a pretty simple question, just because we've been talking about it so much, debating around the sports world. Simple. Should the NFL change their overtime rules? Three options for you. Yes, no, and yes, but only in the postseason.
Yes, but only in the postseason.
I'm a yes.
I just don't like it. I just don't like it. I get it. The Bills, come on, just make a play. You know, make a play. Don't blame it on a coin flip. And they're not, but just make a play. But I still think that in the postseason, every team should get a chance to possess the ball. I just feel
totally agree.
Yeah, I just feel that way about it.
Yeah, a lot of people agree with you guys as well. 46.1% say yes, 26.6% say no, and 27.3% say yes, but only in the postseason. I thought that number might have been a little bit higher when
we
first posted it.
I thought that would have been higher, too. All right, the second question is what we're talking about here on the Burns and Gambo show. For every awesome moment, there is an equal and opposite moment that sucked really badly for the team that gave up that awesome moment. A mistake, a blunder, a screw up. There were some big ones this weekend, right?
Yeah, but which one sucked the most? Your four options are as follows. The Packers special teams, Todd Bowles blitzing Stafford, leaving Cooper Kupp wide open, the Ryan Tannehill interception, and the Bills choosing not to squib kick.
Bowles.
It's a tough one.
It is a tough one. It is a tough one.
I mean, because I could absolutely see, I could see the Bowles one, but I could also see Packers special teams. Man, you got to feel like there's not a lot of time left. Punt the ball.
Yeah.
You can't have a blocked for a touchdown. Ugh. I'm going to go with the Packers.
Okay.
Well, the number one leading option, 40.1%, is no squib kick by the Bills, followed up with 37.6%, the Packers special teams in third place, Bowles blitzing Stafford, 16.6%, and sitting all the way in last place is the Tannehill interception at 5.8%.
You said, Gambo, you said you were going to vote for Tannehill, but none other than Kurt Warner talked you out of it, right?
Yeah, I'll just tell you what Kurt said, because I kind of thought like that was a really bad pass. I thought it was a really bad pass. Like, I thought he forced it into coverage and it was great coverage. And Kurt was like, man, I disagree. Lack of details on the route. Good play by the defender, but plenty of a window to throw it. You can't wait until a guy is open to throw it. You got to make your read and trust your guy to win. He did not. So, and he says, again, we don't throw based off coverage at top of route in most cases. We throw based off of reads telling us to throw somewhere. So he said the read was good. Kurt said that the read to throw it there was good. He didn't make a play, and the other defender did.
That one is far enough down for me on my list. You could make a case. I went with Bowles just because the numbers, for a couple reasons. Number one, The numbers going into the game all weekend suggested that Todd Bowles maybe shouldn't blitz Matthew Stafford. That Matthew Stafford's numbers were so good against the blitz all year that he was one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL against the blitz, and that even though Todd Bowles was one of the most blitz-happy defensive coordinators, he might have to dial it back. That's number one. Number two, I choose Bowles in that moment. And look, I know we all have a special place in our heart around here for Todd Bowles for what he did. So I'm going to tread somewhat carefully here when I say this. But number two, the communication with the entire defense. And Bruce Arians acknowledged this as much after the game, that the decision by Todd Bowles to blitz might not have been communicated properly to everybody defensively. That can't happen. Moment like that, that is beyond inexcusable and cannot happen. Now, is that Todd Bowles' fault? I don't know. But something got really screwed up, and Matthew Stafford even said, man, I was going to hit the underneath guy, but when I saw they were blitzing me, I'm like, okay, I'll take a shot to Cooper Kupp down the field. He did, and it wasted that great comeback by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Absolutely wasted it.
Yeah, nice. It really was remarkable. And then you go back, you watch the play, and I'm just counting. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 blitzes. 6 guys coming, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 guys blocking, and one on one coverage for Cooper Kupp. Right? I mean, it's not one on one coverage for Andy Isabella. It's one on one coverage against Cooper Kupp,
the Triple Crown winning wide receiver in the NFL.
Right.
The wide receiver. Did you see this stat about Cooper Kupp? By the way, with the postseason he's had, he has now passed Larry Fitzgerald.
I saw it.
For the most yards by any wide receiver in any season, yep, regular plus postseason combined.
I think Jerry Rice is third.
I don't know who's third. I only saw number one and number two. Number one is Cooper Kupp, and number two is Larry Fitzgerald and the season he had where he had that incredible postseason. Cooper Kupp just passed him with that game that he had yesterday. Yeah, it was remarkable. And I tell you who was poised to be the biggest blunder of the weekend, and Cooper Kupp and Matthew Stafford bailed him out, and that was Cam Akers. Cam Akers was going to wear it this weekend. He was going to wear it bad this weekend.
He wouldn't have been allowed on the plane if they would have lost that game.
The fumble at the end of the first half that took points off the board, that could have been a touchdown, at the worst could have been a field goal.
And then 2:25 left in the game.
Yep, and then the Adamakin Sue forced fumble. Because without that, Tom Brady doesn't even have a chance to tie the game without that, right?
Tampa's got no timeouts. They got no timeouts left.
None.
Yeah, they got the touchdown to Evans, and they did that. That whole thing was remarkable that they went 3 plays and 77 yards in 36 seconds. So I get that. So they did it quickly. But still, when the Rams got the ball back, 3 minutes and 15 seconds left, they didn't have any timeouts.
Yeah.
There were no timeout. You were going to be able to milk that. If you got one first down, you might have been able to end that game. But he fumbles the ball, and with 2:25 left, and then they end up tying it on the touchdown by Fournette.
As far as the squib kick goes, here's Tony Romo from the CBS broadcast last night. In the moment, he said, "Man, I don't like this at all.
Put this kick on the ground, burn up some time."
Yeah, you want to. I mean, honestly, you just don't want it to be a normal kickoff. You want to be just a little short and make it so you guys can make sure to tackle. Because if you, I just wouldn't want to give Mahomes. I don't necessarily agree with that.
And launches it deep.
Take 4 or 5 seconds off. Mahomes now has 2 plays.
Now, at the time, you're thinking, no big deal. It's 13 seconds. So what? Who cares? Come on. What's he going to do, right? In 13 seconds, how many plays are they going to get off? 2? Maybe 3 at the most? But there are some people who think that not squib kicking it there is what cost the Buffalo Bills that game ultimately, because it would have taken some time off of the clock and just not left enough for Patrick Mahomes to do anything with.
Yeah, it is incredible when you look at all the people that came up with the, you know, started to figure it out. And that's what you get paid for as a coach. You got to figure this stuff out. And they didn't do it. They did not. Now, you can say, listen, I don't want to take a chance on a return. I don't want to take a chance on some crazy return. They got speed. They have a lot of speed. I don't want to take that chance. I'm going to make them have to go all of these yards in 2 plays, and then a guy's going to have to kick the field goal. So, I mean, I kind of understand it, but there are some people saying, okay, well, you could have squib kicked it. That'll take 4 or 5 seconds off. then you could you get a chance to do this once. You hold everybody on the next play, and you take the 5-yard penalty, and that takes some time off, and then all of a sudden they got a chance for one play. I mean, they're basically doing a Hail Mary or something.
Yeah, and then the one we haven't talked about enough, the Packers special teams, the blocked field goal, the blocked punt return for a touchdown, and then in a complete collapse of the system, they only sent 10 guys out there to try to block Robbie Gould's game-winning field goal. I mean, how do you – it's almost like the special teams coordinator just quit. Said, you know what, on second thought, screw this. You know, let's just send – I quit. Let's just send 10 guys. I mean, come on. Not that they would have blocked it if they had the 11th guy out there, but you know how bad of a look that is?
Terrible.
When it comes to your special teams breakdown, terrible. You don't even send out an 11th guy to try to stop Robbie Gould's field goal. Terrible. Just awful.
Yeah. No, it was brutal. Their special teams – You know, special teams played such a factor in these playoffs. Most of it was good. You know, Cincinnati drafts a kicker and he's unbelievable. And Robbie Gould hasn't missed a kick. And that return by Debo, like special, there was a lot of great special teams play.
Big time.
Big time. And then there was the Green Bay Packers, who had a field goal blocked and had a punt blocked for a touchdown. And everybody else is getting these, you know, just really good plays out of special. Now, you could say the 49ers special teams was special because they were the ones who blocked the field goal.
Good.
And they blocked the punt. So you could say that was good for them, but it wasn't good for Green Bay.
No, and the fact that that combination of things happened in a playoff game, I don't think that combination of things ever happened like that in a playoff game. And it cost the Packers, and it's given rise to a whole bunch of questions there, no doubt. When we come back, based off of our poll question, a lot of people want something to change when it comes to the NFL overtime rule. Does not giving both offenses a chance to run plays at the end of a game ruin a game? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo.
Yeah, I mean, it worked out well for us this time, but it's sometimes whenever you got two teams going back and forth like you're going, it kind of stinks that you don't get to see the other guy go. But I'll take the win this time. Obviously, it hurt me last time. All you can do is play the rules the way that the rules are explained, and that's what we did today.
It's Patrick Mahomes, after last night's finale of the great weekend of football that we all saw and witnessed, and he's right. A few years ago, he was on the wrong end of this. It was Tom Brady and the New England Patriots who won the coin toss. It was Tom Brady and the Patriots who marched down the field, and it was Patrick Mahomes who never got the ball in his hands with a chance to answer. And Gambo, it's been noted by many that during that offseason, it was Kansas City who proposed to the Rules Committee, let's change how we do overtime in the postseason. And there were teams back then who just did not have the appetite for it. The Buffalo Bills were a team that did not have the appetite for it back then. Do you think things are going to be different this time around? Or do you think the league will ultimately decide they don't have the appetite?
I think based on the overtime numbers that you brought out earlier, you broke it out. Under the current rules, teams that win the overtime coin toss in the playoffs are 10-1. That's a 90.9 win percentage. If you win the coin toss, teams that win the coin toss are 10-1. 11 playoff games, only once has a team lost the coin toss and won the game. So I tend to think that you got to look at that. It's a larger sample size. It's 11 games. And you got to say, look, in the regular season, this might work. In the postseason, it doesn't work.
Yep. And I think that to me is the distinction here. Look, and nobody, at least me, I know there are probably, you know, disgruntled Bills fans on social media who are yelling and screaming about everything. At the end of the day, the responsibility fell on the Buffalo Bills. You know, make a play in those 13 seconds before it goes to overtime. Make a play so that Patrick Mahomes doesn't go 6-for-6 in overtime. You were the number one ranked pass defense in the NFL. You did not show that to me in those 13 seconds, and you certainly didn't show it to me in overtime. So I get that at some point we have to stop talking about a coin flip and understand that there's some kind of responsibility inherent to the Buffalo Bills and what happened in this collapse. That being said, you're 100% right. If it's about a 52% rate during the regular season under these overtime rules and a 91% rate in overtime in the postseason, that tells me that it's not there's a fairness issue here. It's fair during the regular season. Yeah. It's not fair in the playoffs, and it needs to be more fair than this in the postseason.
So let's break it down a little further. So there were 10 and 1, 10 times a team that won the cross won. 7 of those times, the other team never got the ball. So out of the 10 wins, 7 times the other team did not get the ball. 3 times they did. So there were 3 times when the team that won the coin toss, the other team got the ball, but they still won.
But that's still 70%.
It's still a high number.
Yeah, that's still 70% of the time. And there have been a lot of theories as to why. And one of the ones that I read on Twitter at some point, can't remember who, but not an original thought here by me. But one of the reasons I read why is that the quarterback play in the playoffs, you know, there's not a bum among them, hardly at all. And if you give an elite quarterback, chances are if you're playing in a divisional round, you have a quarterback who's very good, if not elite. And if you give an elite quarterback a chance to say, go score a touchdown and the game is over and the other team will never see the ball, elite quarterbacks like Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes and Drew Brees and anybody else over the course of this current system that we're under right now will get the job done in those circumstances. And I just think for the regular season, it's fine. I get it. You're trying to you're limited injuries and you don't want guys to be out there an excessive amount of time. I think the postseason deserves better, deserves more, deserves a little bit more fairness. I mean, this is win and go home football here, and Josh Allen didn't get a chance to touch the ball. I would like to see a little bit more than what we saw last night.
Even Andy Reid agrees with you because he thinks there should be a change. Here's what Andy Reid said. I'm sure this is something they're going to look at again. I wouldn't be opposed to it. That's a hard thing. It was great for us last night, but is it great for the game, which is the most important thing we should all be looking at? To make things equal, it probably needs to be able to hit both offenses and both defenses. So Andy Reid, who benefited from it, agrees that there should be changes.
Yeah. Now, you sent an email to everybody on the show today, and in that email, there were some ideas as to how to fix overtime in the NFL, how to make it fair. I think it was a Bill Barnwell piece, if I remember right,
Yes.
And he's got a couple of suggestions. Some of them are very, very interesting, including, and I don't even know how to break this one down necessarily, the spot and choose option. Did you read about this in Barnwell's story?
Apparently, I read it. I glanced over it. I looked at a few different things. But, yeah, you can explain it.
The Ravens apparently pitched this overtime rule in March, and Barnwell says it could be the future of overtime. In this scenario, the overtime kickoff is eliminated, and one team gets to choose the yard line from which overtime will begin. The other team then gets to decide whether it will begin overtime on offense or defense.
So you could say, I want to start at midfield.
Yes.
And you've got to go 50 yards to score.
But the other
team, if you don't score, I get the ball at the 50-yard line.
But the other team gets to decide whether it begins that overtime on offense or defense. Yeah, so you, Team A gets to choose where you start from. Team B gets to decide, am I on offense or am I on defense?
Yeah, so you can't say, I want to start at the 5-yard line. Because the other team will say, okay, I'll take the ball.
Right. Right, exactly. Exactly. So
what
then
would be the, what would most teams say? Now, can you win the game with a field goal?
I would imagine so. I would imagine so. But then, so let's say the other team, I mean, you're almost, boy, in that circumstance,
I'm going to say the 20-yard line.
Aren't you better off being the team that loses the coin flip in that scenario to be able to choose whether you want to be on offense or defense? Right? Because every team that wins a coin flip in overtime always chooses to possess the ball first. I would think that no matter
If somebody says anything from the 50-yard line in, you're going to say, I want the ball. 40-yard, even if they said the 40-yard line, I'd say, give me the ball. 30-yard line, I'd probably say, give me the ball.
That's what I mean.
So I think the one that makes it interesting is the 20-yard line. The ball is going to start at the 20-yard line. Do you want the ball or do you want to play defense?
Yeah.
Because now they've got to go to get in field goal range, just say they got to get to the 30-yard line. That means that they got to go 50 yards. Can you move the ball 50 yards on my defense to set up a field goal? 45 yards?
Yeah. How far do you have to go?
Yeah, you want to get to the 30. That's a 47-yarder. You can get to the 35-yard line, but now you're kicking a 50-plus field goal.
One of the other options was to play to 8 points.
I don't like that one at all.
First 8 wins in overtime.
Still one possession could still
be. Because you could still one possession it if you wanted to.
Yeah, and, who's going to score a touchdown and not go for two?
Everybody would if you could.
Of course you would. Everybody's going to go for two.
Right? Yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah. Play a full 15-minute overtime, which is probably the simplest way of doing it. Just play a 15-minute overtime, and whoever's winning the game after the 15-minute overtime wins. I know it's not for everybody. I really like the college option better. I think the NFL game is superior to college football in every way except for overtime. I actually like college football overtime. I think it's fair. I think it's just. I think it makes sense. At times, does it get a little tedious? Yeah, because
it could go on for a while.
It could go on, and in the NFL level, you give every team a possession at the 25. It could go on for a while, and then you got to make them go for two. Maybe in the NFL, you push it back and you start every team from the 35 or the 40 instead of the 25. I don't know, but I've just always thought college football was a very fair way of deciding an overtime game. I've always felt that way, but I know it's not for everybody.
I think they're going to do something. I think they have to. I think that this the 10-1 record, even the seven times that the other team didn't get the. I think and you said it best earlier in the postseason. You're facing these great offenses and great quarterbacks, and they can take the ball and go down and score. Where in the regular season, you're probably getting overtime matchups that don't have a lot of these great quarterbacks.
When we come back, at one point, the 49ers season looked over. At one point, the Cardinals had a 2-game lead and a tiebreaker over the Rams for the division lead. And yet it's the 49ers and the Rams who are playing for the right to go to the Super Bowl and the Cardinals who are watching from home. How does that make you feel if you're a Cardinals fan? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.